Okay, thanks for joining us again on another On Point podcast. Today I'm joined with Mr. Steve Lawton, who's now the Managing Director of MCP Fixins and part of the Mines Construction Group. Obviously, I've known Steve for a long time from the glass industry. Steve, welcome aboard.
Good to see you, Rod. Good to participate, and look forward to getting involved.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So give us a little, just so the audience can understand a little bit about where you've been and some of your industry experience. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Coming from a background of engineering, initially started life as a structural engineer, moved into the glass industry 25 years ago. I've held some senior posts throughout the glass industry, most recently a technical director for a Saudi American group over in Dubai. Spent 22 years in the Middle East, projects involving the Emirates Towers, the Dubai Jumeirah Beach Resort, the Burj Al Arab, involved in the specification and the installation of some of the glazing elements of what was and what is landmark buildings. So I've been lucky enough to be involved in some very exciting projects, from initial concept and design through to on-site fit out.
Well, I'd forgotten just how extensive you've been. I know you'd obviously spent a lot of time abroad, and how the UAE must have changed since you've been there. But I know you've still got contacts there, then you're regularly talking to people. But is there a massive shift in how they're doing business out there and what they're building?
Because they can build 24/7, 7 days a week, their build programs are becoming tighter and tighter. Their supply of product is more global than it's ever been. Pricing is an issue. It never used to be, but it's less of an issue as opposed to quality. They're also looking a lot at the sustainability and the recoverability of the materials on a project, because most projects out there are given a life cycle, and within that life cycle, obviously, you've got to design and consider the elements of the substrates that are being used and the build methods that are being used for dismantling and for recycling.
Are you sort of seeing any trends in the UK? Obviously, you cover a sort of a large reach through Myers with your products. I mean, what sort of products are you dealing with? What part of the industry do you cover?
Well, within the Myers group, they're supplying a lot of the core materials for building projects. A lot of insulation. We're very, very busy with assisting main contractors and building owners with looking at the insulation methods and content following the Grenfell incident. On my side of the business that I focus on currently, the fixing side of the business, we're looking at fixing methods, efficiency on site, recoverability, type of fixings. And more often than not, because architects and designers build buildings to look a certain style, to have a certain quality of appearance, the detail in terms of how it's put together is left to the likes of us to make sure that we do a valued engineering on a project to take things back to the core roots in terms of the fasteners and the fixings ability to hold things together, rather than use 10,000 fasteners on an elevation. You may only be able to use 6,000 or 7,000 fasteners. That 30-40% saving is significant, both in time, cost, and material.
That ties nicely back. I mean, what I try and ask because this is sort of an insight, really. These podcasts are an insight for building managers and building owners. And it's, you know, I like to sort of, you know, some of the value that we can give as people out in the field is some education in how a client can be a better client for themselves and save money. So when I hear you mentioned there sort of like significant savings, I mean, where does that stem? How would that sort of manifest as part of the process where you can guide the client from sort of day one?
One of the things I like to see and I like to promote wherever possible and practical is engagement. If we get engaged with the client or the client's representative, whether it be an architect or a specifier or a designer, the sooner we get engaged, we're bringing along a different view, a different approach to that building, that design, that concept than the original intent would be, in terms of we'll look at and we'll consider, you know, ongoing maintenance after the building has been built. We had an instance at a very well-known landmark in Heathrow where the building was built. It used a phenomenal amount of specialist glass and glazing methods, high value, £3,000 a square metre at the time. And just getting access to that and maintaining that so that the standard of performance that the client had paid for when he was paying £3,000 a square metre was being maintained, because it had been overlooked in the building protocol and procedures after the build. Again, if we'd have been involved earlier in that process, we would have written that into the O&M manual for the building to make sure that certain maintenance, certain procedures were adhered to, so the building's efficiency, cutting costs, maintaining the environment within the building were kept up to a top level.
Is that, you know, those sort of records, you know, once those suggestions have been made? I mean, you mentioned Grenfell, and I imagine at some point there'd have been a lot of discussions, you know, like you mentioned, but whether they're uptaken. I mean, are there records of sort of those initial discussions? Should there be records of those in the initial discussions and recommendations, just for sort of accountability throughout the life cycle of the project?
I think so, yeah. I mean, part of our process is that we do, when we attend meetings and we have discussions, we obviously minute the meeting, we keep a record of the meeting, and we make sure that it's incorporated in any suggestions for improvement going forward.
I know you're a balloon pilot, and the health and safety and all the checks and balances you have to do even before you've taken off, there must be some similarities.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've been flying now for, 45 years, both gliders, light aircraft, and more recently ballooning. And the protocol and procedures that you have to adhere from a safety and a welfare and to maintain good standards of equipment maintenance, you know, your life is at risk. In the same way, unfortunately, the Grenfell incident is an example of that. If you don't, the consequences can be, you know, absolutely catastrophic.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're experiencing that. But not that Grenfell's the first time that we've, you know,
no,
had
no,
to
no. be. I mean, there's many glass projects out there where, you know, the glass, you know, at one point, everybody was looking for frameless glass, fixed-point glazing assemblies. Pilkington were promoting it as the planar system. Saint-Gobain were promoting it as the spider system. These systems need maintaining. These systems have to be looked at every 5 years. Very often when you engage with a building manager and you say, when was the last time your elevation was checked, the bolts were tightened, the torque setting was adjusted, they look at you in a glaze. They just haven't thought about it, looked at it, or considered it. That's a worry. So, you know, there's a definite opportunity moving forward to make sure that these things are inherent within the building handover process to highlight what needs to happen.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, and it's probably one of my, you know, that when people ask us, you know, what should we be doing? That's the, you know, just review your O&Ms and just see what the service life is and how regularly you should be servicing it. I mean, you know, we're attending buildings, and you know, 10 years they haven't had anyone look at the torque fixings, for instance.
Sure.
You know, especially when you've got rig systems, you know. Yeah, they're on rigging and tension wires.
Tension wires stretch. Tension wires, you've got building movement, expansion, contraction. You know, in the Middle East, that can be absolutely huge in terms of movement on a building. And if they're not rechecked, retorqued, reset, then you're compromising, you know, the whole building. And, you know, high winds, the effect of those on these multi-storey high-rise buildings, again, it all has an impact, not only to the superstructure, but to the elevations that are attached to the superstructure. They need to be double-checked.
Where would you say, Steve, is the sort of the biggest potential in the industry? Maybe looking at from your end and fixings. I mean, is there a potential to improve recycling? Is there a potential for, you know, are you touching anything on decarbonisation?
The biggest growth we're seeing at the moment is within the high-rise concrete building elements. The fixings today, we only deal with world-class leading brands of manufacturers of fixings. We don't deal with, let's say, the domestic type fixings. And within the construction structural elements, there's new fasteners and new methods being adopted from the aerospace industry, which bring a whole new technique and quickness of installation to a project. Instead of using a nut and bolt, or instead of using a through bolt expansion, they'll use undercut anchors. They'll use, for want of a better word, a structural rivet that's been developed in the aerospace industry, now being applied into the construction industry. Real fast track method of fixing, and it's a more secure method of fixing. The materials used in those fasteners and fixings is still predominantly steel. The carbon fibres are being looked at, but at the moment it's still predominantly steel. But they're using less numbers of fixings because the fixing method is performance much better than the old traditional methods of through bolts and expansion.
Right, yeah. I mean, concrete is such a contributor to the carbon because it contains so much embedded carbon. So, yes. You know, I'm glad to hear that they're going to be starting to use different technology, because I think other ways of using substructure is going to be, you know, over the, who knows what it'll look like in the next 10 years. So you're already seeing sort of cross industry, so aerospace stuff coming through. Is there an opportunity to, you know, how would you encourage clients? Is there a sort of, if you were king for a day and you could direct them, where would you encourage, you know, where do you see the biggest opportunities for change are at the moment?
I would have said it's instead of doing more of the same, look at new methods, look at new materials, look at the recycling materials that are being produced that can be used in structural elements. I know there's a lot of testing going on at the moment with some of the recycling composites that are being created, using those in building materials. You've obviously got to offset that against the fire risk and other mitigating circumstances surrounding a building's location, design and development. The efficiency of running that building is really important. The energy that goes into and is lost in the use of a building, I think there's a lot of work can happen there. I've been involved a lot recently with off-site prefabricated construction, where quality, content and involvement can be far greater and far better managed than on a site. So the components are leaving a controlled environment of a factory and being delivered to site complete. That's a much better way of construction and building a facility than it is to try and get all the services, all the personnel, all the materials onto a tiny site in, let's say, the middle of London.
If you had to guess, well, you probably have the figures, but what percentage of fixings are going into off-site compared to on-site?
Yeah, at the moment, on-site would probably account for 70% of the volume. Off-site, factory-based, would probably be 30 to 40% of the volume. And the reason for that is that traditionally, we still build on-site. We don't. The market for off-site construction is growing. The main contractors are investing in off-site facilities, but we're not there yet.
Mm. Okay, that's an interesting number, because that is more or less what I've, you know, when I hear the Multiplexes and Maces of the world, you know, yes, and their movements into off-site, they, you know, they've got some big targets. 30-40% is probably where they're at the moment.
Yeah, I agree.
In terms of the impact, can you see any impact that maybe you as a business aim to have on the industry? You know, like if you look forward in 3 or 4 years' time, what would you like to have been the biggest impact that you guys have contributed to?
We're aiming and moving towards only using from a fixings point of view. So it's a limited scope, but nonetheless, it's an indication of where we're going as a group. Only using and supplying product that is considered to be ecologically compliant, reusable where possible, and certainly recyclable wherever possible. Our carbon footprint as a business, we're moving our vehicles away from, you know, diesel and petrol to more and more hybrid and electric vehicles. Our procedures around the business with energy control are all moving in a direction of using less and using what you're using more efficiently. The materials we supply into the projects are really running alongside that. We've set some loose targets in place, but there's definitely a switch and a move to, you know, in the past, I would have been able to buy fixings from any reputable or any manufacturer in the world. Now I'll only go to manufacturers in the world who are fully certified, tested, material traceability, and will go back to back with us in the case of, you know, site attendances, issues and testing protocols, because we need to give the clients peace of mind. And that's why I come back on, it's essential, wherever practical and wherever possible, that we engage with the clients, with their architect, with the designers, with their specifiers, as early as we can on a project to get the best for the project and the ultimate client.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. And, you know, considering the size of the business, it's an admirable challenge to work towards those goals. But what, you know, for a client to really get how important it is to engage early, are some of the perhaps failures that you've seen around fixes that perhaps are not always front of house, that might just highlight how important it is? I mean, are you seeing, is there any sort of war stories you can share out there?
Yeah, we've been called onto projects where a fixing or a material, whether it be in glass, whether it be in steel, whether it be in carbon, has been specified, has been tested, has been proven, and is sometimes costly. But a fixing within the scheme of things might be a couple of pounds, and it's holding up, you know, a ceiling. If that particular fixing that's been specified and detailed from early engagement and everything's been done correctly, but an installer on the job itself decides, well, my fixing in the box in the van looks the same as that one, so I'm going to use mine because it's half the price. That fixing then fails. You get progressive collapse of the ceiling, because as the first fixing goes, because of corrosion, or it might be some chemical attack, it might be some reaction when it's embedded into the concrete, or if it's above a swimming pool, you could get chlorine affecting the fixing. So you get one fixing that fails, there's more pressure then on the second one that fails, there's more pressure then on the second and the third, and so you get progressive collapse. It's happened. It's out there in the public domain. There were several people killed when it happened. That's the kind of scenario we've got to avoid, and there's got to be controls to make sure that the materials and the functionality of what's been specified and agreed and established are maintained on site. That's why off-site construction works.
Off-site construction. Does it, from your experience, do you think the records that are kept, and this is a technology piece, sure, but are they, and you might not know the answer to this, but because a lot of stuff's modelled, but is it transferred into with the same degree into the O&Ms, into the building, and do you see sort of some visibility of where that's being used? So, for instance, would you know, okay, you've sold 10,000 screws to be used into an offsite. Would you expect that your product and how it's being used and the settings and everything have been adhered to would have been transferred into a model for when it's being built in the offsite?
I can only say the offsite manufacturers that we're dealing with, we will be attending the offsite construction probably once a month, you know, once every couple of months, and carrying out tests on our fixings. And when the fixings go in, there's a certain method and there's certain ways of ensuring that they've been installed correctly. Mm-hmm. Because you know if they're not calling down certain tooling, then mm-hmm. they're not putting the fixings in correctly, because the mark that should be on the head of the fixing when it's sunk into, again, we'll talk about concrete. Mm. If that mark doesn't appear on the head of the fixing, then they've been put in by some other method which would be non-compliant mm-hmm. and non-approved. So those fixings would have to come out.
All right. Do you give training as a company?
Yes. Yes, we give extensive training, and the manufacturers support that with extensive training, both on-site and off-site for construction purposes.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's the training. There seems to be a sort of common theme is, especially with, you know, we've got an aging workforce and new people coming in aren't sort of almost being given that sort of grandfather experience of how to use this stuff, so you're relying on the new, especially the new modern materials, training from the manufacturers.
Yeah.
So sort of the last part of the point, I suppose, point of this discussion is the T, which is the transformation. So where do you think our biggest transformational point is? You know, what would you suggest that as an industry, so let's say construction generally, that we need to start transforming to bring us all up to speed, I suppose, and all singing and dancing in the same direction? Or do you see there's an inflection point, something that we should be transforming that's from your point of view, you think, okay, well, actually, this is how I would drive it if I was in charge of all construction?
I think having just gone through the COVID experience, and, you know, we always hear about it being, you know, exceptional, unprecedented times. I think what we've all learned more than anything during that period of time is the ability to use technology to communicate, as we are now in this discussion. I think there's an opportunity there for a huge amount of face-to-face, office-to-office education, training, understanding, that would be more efficient than, you know, getting in a car, travelling into central London or any other city to sit around a table and discuss what can sometimes be a 10-minute point or 15-minute point. I think getting that dialogue, getting that interaction and exchange going more frequently will only improve matters. As far as that being transferred to the project, again, the more we inform, the more we communicate, the more we educate and train people, the better it's going to be. You then got obviously on-site management and ensuring that safety and health and welfare and the project on-site efficiencies are maintained. But the biggest impact, it would probably be technology. It would probably be the ability to use technology, you know, within the classroom and also on site, you know, picking up faults, feeding that back into an office, getting it dealt with quickly and efficiently, and then, you know, establishing the cause and moving on to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I mean, that feedback and online training, I think that's, you know, there's more webinars and seminars and training.
Massive potential. You know, we're touching on it now and we're skirting with it now. But during the pandemic, whilst we were, you know, well, not all of us, but a lot of people were based at home, working from home, I think that was really a turning point for a lot of people in their lives. And having that ability to use that as the platform to move it on and make it more of a habit rather than a you know, an enforced practice, I think that would be a good thing for everybody.
Yeah, totally agree. So I think we've covered a lot of ground there, Steve. It's been really interesting, and I think especially, you know, I mean, I'd love to hear more. Maybe we'll do another podcast where we'll maybe break down a specific job, because there are millions and millions of fixes going into London, you know, the whole of the UK construction on a daily basis.
Well, everything is held together with something, and that something is a fixing or a fastener.
Yeah. And you're probably supplying most of it.
I wish I was. I'd be absolutely very happy. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Okay.
And hope you've all taken something from this. I think quite an insightful walk through the world of fixings and how it impacts us on in construction. So hope to see you on the next one.